Today's show is sponsored by Bob's Red Mill. With natural foods, they support organic, vegan, paleo, and gluten-free lifestyles. Learn more about their commitment to good food for all at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. Today is Tuesday, May 2nd, 2017. That's right, it's the first week of May, and it's time for some flower power and more. So we've got some great guests with us today at Heritage Radio Network. That was a pretty good intro, right? Flower power.
Beautiful.
Great job, Hillary. She wrote that. All right. Hillary Fasten. And I'd like to welcome to the show our special guest. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Jen Maslanka. I am the GM at the Spring Lounge.
In New York City, look at that. Talking about New York City beer bars today.
Kirk Strubel from 4th Avenue Pub et al.
Bobby Gagnon from The Gate in Park Slope, Brooklyn.
All right. Check us out, Instagram at @beer_sessions and Twitter. So this is the show about beer bars. I mean, originally we were going to do this and there was a snowstorm. Was it in March?
Yeah, I think we were going to do it in either late February or early March when that big blizzard came.
It was right around the time that of the Spring Lounge 20th anniversary.
Yeah, it was right
just
before
prior
the 20th.
To, yeah.
Yeah.
So it kind of got, it was inspired by what? The idea that Spring Lounge has been open for 20 years.
Yeah, we just, Spring Lounge has been around for a very long time, way more than 20 years, but the current iteration is just celebrated its 20th anniversary, which Bobby is a part of the founding trio of owners, along with Brian and Dave. And the Blind Tiger, our other sister bar, celebrated 20 years last year. The Gate, Bobby's bar, is celebrating 20
in about 3 weeks.
20 in 3 weeks. Yeah. So that was something worth celebrating, we felt like. You know, places, every day in New York you see places close that were your favorite places or the places that your parents talked about going to and, you know, that were filled with nostalgia, and they're just not here anymore. And so the idea that we've all made it 20 years, knock on wood, many, many
I feel
years.
Like also the stark, what we're talking about is the stark difference between what New York City, the New York City beer scene was like in 96, 97, and, you know, compared to now, mm-hmm. you know, and that, that sort of early pioneering few bars around here, a few breweries around, and now we're at 5,500-ish, you know, in the country. And it's kind of remarkable. It's kind of remarkable that we're here 20 years in New York City, but also kind of remarkable what's happened in craft beer.
Jen, why did you invite Kirk Strubel?
Because I like hanging out with him, and he's got a good
mustache.
Pretty
cool. Mustache for radio.
Also because, Kirk is one of my favorite bars in New York City. 4th Avenue Pub is just definitely my go-to for hanging out. And him and his partners run so many great craft beer bars in New York City, and they've been doing it. They were sort of that second wave of places, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, the first wave was places like TBA, Mugs, Jimmy's, Blind Tiger, Spring Lounge, etc. You know, Kirk came along, Fourth Ave just celebrated 10 years.
10 years, yeah, October celebrated 10 years. So that was, a unique milestone for us. We were very happy to make it. You know, there were a lot of struggles, obviously. I'm sure you guys can speak to the things that you've had to go through, you know, over 20 years, which is crazy. Hopefully we could make it to that point. But it's every day is like, you know, there's always something.
But, and just to chime in on Kirk and 4th Avenue Pub, when Kirk arrived on the scene, we were just saying this before we went on air. I had been in business about 10 years to that point, and I think he's just crossed 10 or on your way to 11.
Yep.
And I went down to check out his bar, and it was that first feeling like, even though he's fairly distant, you know, as the Brooklyn distances are measured from where I am, but I was like, okay, here we go. You know, here comes the craft beer bars. Here comes some more, you know, it's a foot traffic thing in New York. It's like the more the merrier. You get a few places open. If you got people moving around, you're selling more beer. And that's, you know, when Kirk showed up with a proper beer list, with a pub environment, it was like, okay, here we go. And then we became friends a couple of years after he opened.
Yeah, yeah.
When he finally came out from the cellar.
Where I spend most of my time.
Well, ask a couple of questions. So I know I read a little bit about your backgrounds, and you've all talked about what it's like, you know, running a bar. It's not as glamorous as people think. I mean, how do most people think your life is as a bar owner or manager?
Lifestyles of the rich and famous, I guess.
Yeah. You know, it's
all night
long. It's a superintendent position. I mean, yeah. For all of us. And it's, you know, I mean, the service business is, you know, for the most part, it's viewed as like a party every night. And it's just, you know, it's all fun and games and confetti. And it's hard work. And it's, you know, 20 years in, I still love it. I mean, it's getting the game ready for the customer that still makes
sense. So I can't just sit all night at the bar and drink for free.
Well, you can do that on occasion, you know, when things are running well and there's not, you know, plumbing issues and draft issues. And
when is that?
And a lot of people see us, too, when we're hosting events, which is we carve out that time to be able to just be upstairs playing host where we're just drinking and having a good time.
Yep.
They don't see that an hour before that we were wrestling with kegs in the walk-in or plunging the toilet, you know, at the same time.
And in service, at any given moment, you know, a fire starts. Yeah. You know, not a literal fire, but, you know, when we put out fires, that's what we do for a living. You know, and then you get pulled away from the party, and you're back to work.
I remember before I met Bobby, actually going to the gate and, you know, just being there and, you know, kind of viewing what was going on, what have you. And I saw Bobby bussing tables. And I go, that's the guy that owns this place. And you could tell because that, you know, that's what you end up doing. And you're always, you know, people, I can have fun in my own bar, but very frequently I'm just like looking around to see what's wrong. Oh, this person needs this bust or that person needs a drink. And, you know, it's just kind of there's a lot going on all the time. So, I'm always trying to be on top of, you know, the surroundings. So it just reminded me, I was like, oh yeah, that guy over there, he's probably the owner.
And that's 100% of the reason why these bars that we're talking about today are great bars, because you've got people on site from the owners on down to the staff who know that it's about comfort. It's it's a bar. I mean, you need people to get in there and get comfortable and sit in there and enjoy the four walls. You know, New Yorkers need to get out of their houses, take a little walk, sit down, have a proper beer. And we make that, we provide that comfort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, let's pop a beer. What do you want to do first? Kirk, did you bring an Industrial Arts?
Yeah, I brought a couple from Industrial Arts. I have this one, the Power Tools from Chief Jeff O'Neill. God bless him.
That's a good sound.
That was a nice sound effect I did.
I'm really happy to have you guys in the studio, and thank you. Because Jenna was like, yeah, it's 20 year of Spring Lounge, but you were like, oh, I'm not... I wasn't there like in the beginning, so it shouldn't really be talking about it. But you kind of have to talk about it. Because, I mean, Bobby, what you're saying is, remember you mentioned, tell us about when you guys first started back then. What were the other beer bars? And what were you guys selling? You know, and were people ready for it?
Well, I'll go back to when I met Dave Broderick and Brian Delaney. It was down in Tribeca. I was working at Walker's down in Tribeca. And then I moved over to, Dave, who was working over at River Run. And we just started talking about beer, and Brian Delaney was a beer rep at that time. And, Dave had convinced, the guys down at River Run to add a few lines and start introducing, you know, some of the craft beer that was available, which then came from the Brooklyn Brewery, Craft Brewers Guild. And that just steamrolled into, you know, Dave had this Blind Tiger thing, and he went full steam ahead, opened the place. I was bartending there, and we were like... off and running, you know. Those guys went in and scouted the location for the Spring Lounge, and then the location for the gate came up based on Brian sitting at a red light at Fifth Avenue and Third Street and going, for lease, you know, and made a couple phone calls. And so it all went hot and heavy. And to be honest, it was out in Brooklyn, it was certainly an outpost kind of mentality. The only thing out there when I got out there was Sparky's over in Carroll Gardens. Waterfront Ale House on Atlantic Avenue, which then moved to another location, but they were on the opposite side. And then the Park Slope Ale House, which was a brewery at that time. So there really wasn't, nobody really knew what we were doing when we got there. But we opened, it took us about a year and a half, just about 2 years, for people to start realizing what we were about. And we never looked back. Once we got to the end of that second year, we opened up the outdoor seating. We have a nice outdoor seating area, and never looked back.
So that's cheers to 1997. That was a cool time. But the DBA was open, Blind Tiger, Spring Lounge was opening, the Gate was opening. Even John Blusey and the Heartland Brewery had opened up by then too. So there must have been something cool going on then. For you, Kirk, you know, what inspired you, you know, when you were first starting out? How did you end up opening your first beer bar?
When I first moved here, my very first job, first and only job, was at the Westside Brewing Company, which is on 76 in Amsterdam, which is now Amsterdam Ale House, which is also in our stable of bars that we own. So I was bartending there, and just kind of it was the last vestiges of the brewing operation there, and afterwards, most of the beer came out of the Chelsea Brewing Company. But long story short, we decided to expand the tap list. They put in some new, draft towers, and I'd always been, kind of into craft beers, but back then they were called microbrews.
Which it still makes sense to a lot of people. Yeah. To call them microbrews, doesn't it?
And So I was doing the beer buying there, and I had worked with a guy bartending who ended up being my partner, Jacob, and he said, "Hey, I have a place in Brooklyn that I want to open a bar. Do you have any money?" And I had saved some money, so I was like, "Yeah, let's make it happen." So that was basically how it went. And I'd always been into craft beer, so I knew that with our spot, that's what I would want to do, is have a 27 draft lines, way too many now, but I'd rather do much less, more curated. But certainly it's what it was back then. It's like the more you had, the better. Then you had to have cask, then you had to have, so it was just, so now I've kind of gotten myself in trouble, and I think Bobby probably is the same situation with
Well, the funny thing is you could also at the same time say, if I doubled my draft lines, that I couldn't keep all the brewers happy.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
There's just so much of it out there with guys who are self-distributing, and you know, there's just always a knock on the door. I'm opening up a brewery over here in such and such a neighborhood or such and such a town, and here's a sample. There's plenty of stuff out there now.
Yeah, coming from the opposite end where I only have 12 lines, I wouldn't necessarily beg for more. 16 would be okay.
Right.
I wouldn't want to go more than
that. Oh yeah, I think that's a good sweet spot.
It's very hard to make everyone happy. I feel like I'm constantly apologizing.
You just have to make yourself happy, Jen. Don't worry about everyone else.
But how do you handle it, Jen? So, I mean, there's, I know from wine, there was 30 wine distributors in 20 years ago. Now there's 300 in New York City. There's so many self-distributors and distributors, whatever. How do you do it? You're purchasing, a popular bar, 12 lines of beer. How do you do it every week?
A couple things. Number one, I really pay attention to what the actual customers want, because they're the ones buying the beer. Mm-hmm. So if I bring in a brewery that, even if all the beer geeks are clamoring over it and everyone is talking about it and whatever, and it sits on my lines and it's not moving well, I'm not going to bring that beer back. Even if in theory it's a, it looks good to have it on my list, I'm not going to have it if my people aren't enjoying it, Whereas I've had other breweries that I've just, for example, Cambridge Brewery, I put on their Flower Child IPA
from Massachusetts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it sold. I couldn't believe how fast it sold. And, it's not a very well-known brewery, especially at a bar like mine that it doesn't get all the people that necessarily clamor for the specialty stuff. Mm-hmm. It flew out the door, and now they get a regular spot on my line.
I think that's also part of the excitement that still, that's the thing about it is this far into it, it's still exciting.
Mm-hmm.
That you there's still surprises. There's still stuff out there that, maybe you were looking at it, and maybe not, and then all of a sudden it's, that's your permanent line or your semi-permanent line.
Yeah.
And now you guys are my panel of experts. So tasting one of our favorite brewers, Jeff O'Neill, Industrial Arts, Power Tools. Honestly, what do you think of this IPA?
It's great.
I think what Jeff does is Jeff has just an expert. His stuff reeks of expert. He just he has incredible balance. This particular IPA, it's not a punch in the face IPA. It certainly has a nice solid hop bite, but it pushes into malt enough where it's for me it's balance, especially in this IPA centric situation we're in now in this business, and this one in particular, it's crushable for, what is it, 7%-ish?
Yeah,
it's somewhere six, right. Or 6.5% or something, yeah.
What I dig about it is it doesn't look like orange juice, like which are most of the IPAs are coming out the New England style, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of backlash going on now with the unfiltered and the OJ.
I actually just, when I was placing orders today, I looked at an IPA that I had never poured before. I was like, oh, what's that IPA like? And I Googled it to read some of the specs, and I saw, like, super juicy, unfiltered, and I was like, nope, never mind. Yeah. You know, and I feel like that time has passed. And the customers
it has, but
are kind
at the same time, there are brewers
well.
Out there that are still, you know, they're still kicking it with that style. But I think the problem now, I think, in the business is that there's again, with the IPA center thing, there's a piling on kind of a thing, and everybody's just kind of jumping on to the New England style
chasing,
or whatever the next thing is going to be.
Oh, sure.
And you're going to have a lot of variations on the theme.
You could say that about any style, though. I mean, I can't tell you how many breweries still walk in the door. Well, you know, because the same thing happens to you, where they're like, have you tried my new Boysenberry Berliner Weiss? I'm that was the trend two years ago.
Goza.
Right. Yeah, or another fruit goza, or another tropical flavored pale ale with, you know, blood orange or whatever.
That's awesome. We're on a great start here. No, we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Hey, this is Chef Eric from Roberta's Radio. I love eating pizza for every meal, but sometimes I've got to branch out. Bob's Red Mill makes some stellar breakfast foods.
Hey, Eric, the food in your big, bright, beautiful breakfast bowl looks delicious.
Thanks. It's muesli.
Muesli?
Nah, muesli. It's like raw granola. You should try it.
I don't know. My rich daddy buys me quail eggs and foie gras for breakfast every morning.
Well, let me hip you on to something else. Did you know Bob's Red Mill is the flagship sponsor of Heritage Radio Network? I bet you if we call Bob himself, he can convince you.
Hi, Bob here.
Wait, is this the man from the muesli package?
Yes, I'm Bob Moore. How can I help you?
Hey there, Bob. This is Eric from Heritage Radio Network, and I'm here with Mike, who I'm trying to convince to try muesli.
Oh, I love muesli. Muesli is such an easy way to start the day. I can take a bag of muesli and munch on it in my car and get full whole grain nutrition for everything I need for at least half the day.
That is incredible. But what the heck is in the muesli anyway?
It has rolled oats, rolled wheat, rolled barley, rolled triticale, and, of course, our dried fruits and the seeds that are so important to our health. It's one of my very, very favorites.
After Bob's glowing recommendation, you going to try it?
Like they say, try it. You'll like it.
All right. Let me at that muesli.
By the way, you can find more delicious whole grain breakfast ideas at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
I'll check that out. I'll surf over there.
Surf on over, dude.
Hey, welcome back. Hey, guys, have you had Bob's Red Mill muesli lately? That's a pretty interesting ad.
I have, actually.
Just found
you just
out.
Chew on it in the car and you're driving to work.
I eat it for breakfast.
Did you really?
Milk and blueberries.
Wow. Well, that's cool.
Are you serious?
Just learned something.
Wow.
But, you know, so, Kurt, your idea was that Jen should, what, do her beer place order her, on the on
place
the
her
air.
Beer order on
yeah,
the
I
air.
Just realized
I think she just did.
This is inside the life of a real, you know.
I did. I just texted my beer rep a picture manager. Of the handwritten order that I posted.
That's exciting radio right
basement.
There. That's exciting radio.
So what do you say, Bobby? Should she do it?
I think she's already done it.
It's not that exciting.
You going to read it out loud for us?
It's really
You mean
good.
You posted it? But you didn't read it out loud. I want you to read it out loud.
Actually, one of the things I wanted to comment on, if she's reaching for her order real quick, is she was talking before the break about catering to the crowd, which is really what's changed for us in the New York City beer scene, where we were just trying to get anything we can get our hands on and putting it out there.
Yeah.
And hoping that people were going to go for it. And, you know, people were certainly willing to experiment, and that's what turned us into who we are. But now, with you know, the sours we were talking about, the IPAs, it's like people are coming in much more educated than they ever have.
Yeah.
Those first 5-8 years that we were there, it was like, oh, here's this. Let me tell you a little something about this.
Mm-hmm.
And now they come in kind of knowing what even what direction they're looking in.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not specifically what they're looking for, but what direction they're
but
going.
But, Jen, for a while, you know, like Spring Lounge didn't get until last year when Kirk started a campaign and made us realize how great of a beer bar you were.
Everyone was standing with Spring Lounge.
Standing with Spring Lounge. You open at 8 a.m. for people getting off shifts.
That's right.
But you have to read your order to us. Come on.
All right. I'll just give you the basic rundown.
So you're ordering beer for tomorrow or the next day?
It'll come in tomorrow.
Wow, this is late for... Wow.
Union Beer, you can...
Wow, who's her rep?
Jeez, who do you know?
Union Beer, you can text until 5:30.
Boy,
some of the other ones, not so much. I got some Downey's cider. That has gone really well. Yeah. We recently this year swapped out solid cider. We swapped out our cream ale line for a cider line because customers were asking for cider.
And do you rotate in the seasonal stuff on that line too, or do you keep it just the Downey's, the original blend?
I've just been doing Downey's. I just recently added Citizen Cider cans to my lineup, and so I'm thinking about rotating some of their seasonal stuff in the can for a little more variety. And also, they're two totally different types of cider.
Yeah, I think they do. I think they do four or five seasonals. I think
they do.
You know, four strict seasonals and add some more stuff.
So anyway, Greenport Harbor Porter, Black Duck Porter, which the only other time I was on the show, I stated as being one of my favorite beers of all time. Ordered that one. Porters are a good.
That's a good one.
It's good warm weather. Everyone's high fiving. It's good warm weather dark beer. Bell's Oberon. Because people actually come in just simply requesting Bell's Oberon without even looking.
That is great this time of year.
Yvonne sends all of them in.
Yeah.
Hands out business cards.
Exactly.
First time you ever had Bell's Oberon?
At the brewery in Kalamazoo.
And for us, it was the first year they were here right after the launch. They launched in February. The Oberon came out like a month later.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'd never had it before. Yeah. I'd never had any Bell's before.
Really?
That launch in February. Yeah.
Wow.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Keep going. This is good.
That's
all you ordered?
That's it. Two cases.
No, I ordered some more. I mean, the rest are, it's all cases. It's our standard lineup of Duval, Orval, Narragansett, Allagash White, Bell's Two Hearted, Dale's Pale Ale.
You really do move a lot of, like, craft beer.
Yeah, we do. Actually, we definitely are not craft exclusive. I sell a fair amount of PBR and Guinness, and I am never mad at a good pint of Guinness. Never will be. But,
What Jen has done at Spring Lounge with the beer program has been fantastic. It was that thing where we talked about years ago, you know, it's a starter beer bar kind of thing. And it's not. It's the Spring Lounge is a bona fide beer bar. I mean, you know, you just said Duval, Orval. And with what you do with the 12 lines is, to me, it's remarkable.
Thank you.
I would go down to 12 lines based on what she's doing with those 12 lines.
You know, one thing I read about you, Bobby, you were talking about being a neighborhood, local bar.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me you're saying you're that, and Spring Lounge has that feeling, too.
Certainly.
So tell us about your, like, ideal local neighborhood bar. What's a pub? What's your tavern? I feel like those words weren't really respected. To me, I always call my place a pub.
Well, as we were talking before we went on the air about where we come from, I come from a working-class town, and... there are no frills bars. Everything is a bar. It's a bar. You come in there, it's a community. It's a place where you feel comfortable or you don't. And if you don't, you move on to the next thing. But it's a community location. It's everybody. I've got people, and part of the thing I'm doing for my 20th anniversary week is a night strictly for... I still have regulars from 20 years ago that come in there, and it's a night for them. Awesome. You know, we've had... births, deaths, weddings, divorces. I mean, it's become one giant life story, that bar, you know, in almost a generation. And that, to me, is a local pub. You know, it's like it's modeled after the Irish, you know, the Irish local.
And then, Kirk, so how many bars do you have?
We have seven.
Seven.
Yeah, seven
and
spots.
Is there one common characteristic of all of them?
I mean, yeah, I would say craft beer, certainly. You know, that's one common characteristic. But outside of that is the lack of pretension. I mean, just... I've always thought that people, if you're trying to sell somebody something, you know, make them comfortable first. Like, you know, foster environment, like Bobby was saying, that is comfortable and people feel welcome. And, you know, they'll try things. And that's basically what we've always tried to do. I always say this. There was a place in San Diego that I went to one time before I opened any of the spots. It's called the Liars Club, and it was this dingy pub, you know, situation. It's not even there anymore, but They had a great draft list, just an amazing draft list, a lot of local San Diego and other California beers. And just, you know, that was it. They were just serving it. That's all they were doing. They didn't make it, so they weren't, you know, being pretentious about it. Like, oh, you want to try this? Try that. Try that. Try that. I just, you know, I get to the point where a lot of these places that you go to now, and I don't want to sound like a, you know, whatever, old guy, but it's like a beer museum. Am I there to drink, or am I there to, like, you know, I can look at a beer and be very enamored with the, you know, how it looks and, you know, all this. And, but, you know, I like to drink it and, like, talk to the person that's next to me and not, like, worry about I'm checking in on some app about, you know, what I'm drinking. So, anyway, that's
so what, my tell five us cents. All the bars, this, all seven bars. We list them out for us.
Okay, so we have 4th Avenue Pub. These are the spots in Brooklyn. 4th Avenue Pub. We have the Fulton Grand. We have Union Street Pub. We have the Evergreen. And then the city, I have Church Public, Amsterdam Ale House, and 3rd Avenue Ale House.
He hasn't slept
and
in 6 years.
And only one good beer seal.
What?
Among all of them.
No, I started. I tried to start the campaign. I stand with 3rd Avenue Ale House.
I stand with the other six bars. How about that?
Well, I guess you got the 4th Avenue Pub as your flagship.
That is, yeah. I mean, you know, everyone always asks, like, what's your favorite? I'm like, and that's immediately my answer. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the one that I have, you know, certainly the most personal, just, you know, attachment to, because it was my first place, and I just really, you know, say, oh, blood, sweat, and tears, but yeah, and plunging and painting and all that.
What's the next beer you poured? Because this is really good.
Oh, this is, we're going, keeping with the theme, this is another one of Chief's beers. This is the Metric Pilsner.
Oh, Industrial Arts Metric Pils.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So the cans, you know, we're,
I haven't had any of the Pilsners yet. It's really nice.
I have it on draft at Jimmy's number 43, and I've been drinking it straight every day the last 2 weeks, and I'm on my third keg, so.
Nice.
Excellent.
And that was what I had before I came here.
Jimmy's private line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there you go. And it always changes, you know. That's a good one. What's your private line? The thing that you're drinking right now, and do you buy what you want to drink just for yourself?
Yeah, you know? That definitely has an impact. I mean, as far as if you go across the, you know, obviously the breadth of the tower or the breadth of your beer list, no. But there's always one or two that are in there that you are so happy
made it down the ramp. The gate. You want to go back tonight?
Gate,
what are you going to drink?
And I am going back tonight because we just tapped the Grim Idaho 7, which I'm really the Grim Double IPA.
I think we're all going to the gate tonight.
Oh, yeah, for
go
sure.
Go back
sure.
to old school, 20
years. I was thinking the Evergreens.
More often than not, I'm going back to the gate.
But, you know, I mean, it's, you know, we're all, it's, you walk into your own place, even though, like, what Kirk said is earlier is completely true, that sometimes you walk across your own threshold and it's not, you're not going to really sit down and relax. You're going to bust some tables. You're going to see if the bartender's okay. You're going to change a keg, you know, troubleshoot this or that. But you are going in there, obviously, to check up on the place, to make sure everybody's okay, everybody's good, but to have that thing, that line, that, you know, that
so what
new
else?
Beer
what else do bar owners do? Do you adjust the lights and the volume of music?
Definitely.
I bet Kurt. How do you do it with seven places? How often do you visit each one?
I'm very hands off.
He's got the app. He's got the app.
Yeah, I have the. It's a Big Brother. You're gonna love it. Put that down. I try to hire, or we all try. I mean, I have partners, you know, so we hire people that we trust, that we know are going to follow what we want them to do. And yeah, every once in a while you walk in and like, oh yeah, why is the, you know, popcorn burning or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, we put our trust in these folks, and we have to kind of give them that latitude. Cause otherwise, you know, you sit there and micromanage, it gets insane. So I try not to, you know, be that crazy about it. Yeah, I'll walk in every once in a while, I go, yeah, pick that up, or, you know, can you do this? But that's not really what I... Otherwise, I'd lose whatever hair I have left, let's be honest.
Well, and those bars that have the owners that micromanage everything, they tend to really not hold on to staff for very long.
Right.
Because they don't encourage a sense of ownership for the people that are really working so hard for you to sell what you're giving them. Mm-hmm. You know, I always say, like, my job is to grease the wheels. Your job is to drive the car.
Yep.
You know?
It's your show.
Like, it is. It's their show, and they have to be happy. And so I just want to make sure that, you know, in not micromanaging. Yeah, if I come upstairs and the music is too loud because some of my bartenders are deaf from screaming at people for 20 years, and that's understandable, I'll turn it down. But, you know.
Janet, at what time does Spring Lounge open?
So we open at 8 a.m. and we close at 4 a.m.
So it's like Soho, Little Italy.
Yeah, we're technically Nolita.
Nolita.
Mm. Yeah.
I knew that, but I wanted you to say it.
Yeah.
So 8 a.m. I'm in there. What would be a good first beer of the day for me? Because I might have to start drinking at 8 a.m. Yeah. I don't know anymore.
The crew at 8 a.m. has changed a lot over the years. When I first started at the bar, which is this year is my 14th year at the Spring Lounge.
Wow.
Not to age myself, but it was a lot of like old school Soho Bowery artists, you know, old man types, mm-hmm. a lot of people that didn't have families, very eclectic crowd. Now it's a lot younger crowd, and I don't mean young like kids, young like our age.
Mm-hmm. Even that early in the morning.
Like, yeah,
and look how young we are.
And yeah, I mean, they're freelancers. They're entrepreneurs. They do their own thing. They work nights. They run their own businesses. So. You know, I mean, early in the morning. Listen, I have guys who come in, and by 9 a.m., they're already drinking glasses of tequila. So,
Jen, question. Do you still have the early drinkers, early morning drinkers society? Yeah.
The early morning drinkers society. So if you come in, I believe it's 15 times. We give you a little punch card, like your favorite little neighborhood coffee shop does. 15 times between the hour of 8 a.m. and 2 p.m., you'll get a little hole punch, and after 15 times, you're officially inducted into the Early Morning Drinker Society. You get a T-shirt, and that gives you, I don't know, it's like a
dollar. Do you get a sticker?
A
seal?
It's like a, you get Have a T-shirt. You get a T-shirt that we do not sell to other people.
Exclusive.
It's an exclusive T-shirt. Although, actually, we did say if someone wanted to buy it, they could, but it would cost $100.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's no buying.
Any other 8 a.m. bars in the neighborhood anymore? Are they used
Not
to be?
In the neighborhood. There's one. I forget the name of it. There is one down downtown, like Financial District area.
Right. There's not many of them left.
No, not really. We're the only ones. I mean, listen, if you can be open, why not? Just do it.
Right. Yeah.
Why not? I'm more in favor of drinking alcohol early than I am smoking weed, but I'm in a different political persuasion these days. All right, kids. We'll be back in a short minute on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. You can become a member. I'm a member. There's a lot of great members, and there's member benefits. So check it out, heritageradionetwork.org. I'm really happy to be here tonight with some, prestigious and highly regarded members of the beer bar community in New York City. That should have been my intro at the beginning. But we got Bobby
Couple
Gagnon
drinks
from
and
the
we're prestigious.
Gate, Kirk Struble from 4th Avenue Pub and more, and Jen Maslanga from the Spring Lounge. So, quick sideline. So there is a connection here. Spring Lounge and the Gate opened about 20 years ago. You guys have affiliations with, like, Blind Tiger and each other. And, that was a special time, and we all think so highly of Dave Broderick and Brian from Blind Tiger. What did you guys benefit from that? You know, what was it was almost like this little club that you guys opened up. There was a couple bars that related to each other. It's kind of a cool story.
I think for the Gate in particular, it was a very, very strong, singular-minded enthusiasm for craft beer, which wasn't really here in New York at that time. So, we all went full steam ahead with the product. And decided that, wait a minute, this is something that, we need to spread the word kind of thing, And I think when I was here with Dave last time, we were talking about DBA at that time, and obviously Mug's Ale House in Brooklyn, which we would, you know, we'd constantly make runs over to the Brooklyn Brewery and Mug's, because there were only a few places at that time. What are we drinking here?
That is the beer that I brewed with Captain Lawrence.
Oh, right. Your 20th anniversary beer, yeah?
Yeah, essentially. It was supposed to be our 20th anniversary beer, and then we decided not to have a party, so so it just ended up being our beer.
Well, we're having one now.
This is a good beer to drink at 8 a.m. It's a 5.5% American Pale Ale called Coastal Elite. You know, for those in the know, you know
what
that means.
Captain Lawrence Coastal Elite.
Yeah.
I dig it.
It's, I wanted to do the exact opposite of what we were talking about before, which were those unfiltered juice bombs. I wanted to do a throwback beer to, like, a crushable,
completely crushable,
tiny, yeah, just sort of resiny, easy drinking pale, yeah, ale.
It's great.
Thank you.
It's so nice hanging out with some beer bar owners and manager
Cheers,
types
guys.
Because this is the mellowest show we've had in a long time, in a good way. I'm totally relaxed. Now I'm going to ask some weird questions. Okay. So you guys, as you know, beer bar types, you know, who wants to talk about pricing beer? You know, that seems to be, I don't think it's a big deal in New York City. I feel like that people know if they want good beer, they're getting it and they're paying for it. But let's just say, like, you know, generally how you price beer, what do you think is a fair price for a pint? You know, and are there, should other half cost more than Sierra Nevada, for example?
No. I will say that it's one of the things I thought about for our 20th anniversary week is we're going to roll back prices. We're going to have some fun with, you know, giveaways and that kind of thing. But it's, when we opened, it was $5 and $6 for a pint, four at happy hour, five regular price. And then the next price increase was to six. We're at $6 and $7 now at the gate for the most part. There's obviously the beers that have, you know, the newer breweries that have come on, the recent wave of price increases that make things shorter pours, like a 12-ounce pour for $8, or, you know, but we're definitely not city priced, but I pay strict attention to the neighborhood, what the neighborhood's looking for, mm-hmm, and order accordingly and price accordingly. And there are things that I have to lay off of because I'm not going to charge $1 an ounce to drink beer.
Yeah.
I mean, unless it's some crazy imperial stout.
I mean, yeah. There was an article I read, Bobby, where you quoted something like that, where you said some of the breweries you work with, like a Bell's, for example, mm-hmm, want to gauge their prices based on who's sitting in your bar stool.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there's Bell's, Lagunitas, you got Sierra Nevada, you've got so many of them that are their core pricing, you know, they're working hard to keep their core pricing in line with, and Larry Bell said it to me himself, it's like they're thinking of the guy in the seat when they're, you know, expanding and putting kegs out to the country. It's, you know, we don't, they're not capitalizing so much as they're, it's like they want to spread that for them specifically. They want to spread that Kalamazoo kind of feeling, mm-hmm, out to the new markets.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with Bobby 100%. We're a little more expensive at the Spring Lounge, mm-hmm, but that's also because our rent
it's
is
rent.
A little
it's
more
rent.
Expensive.
No question.
But I also, and also what the island of Manhattan can absorb, mm-hmm, is slightly more. But I, in the sense of what I choose to pour, when a rep comes in and they're like, no, I know it's a really expensive Sixtel, but you can just charge $10 for a 10-ounce pour. First of all, we don't do 10-ounce pours at the Spring Lounge. My customers would not stand for it. If I handed them a wine glass of beer, they would just throw it in my face and walk out the door. So we have pints and we have 16-ounce. I mean,
what's
we have 12-ounce.
What's the expletive that they would say? You can say it on
the Spring Lounge, there's many.
Oh, wow.
Don't let me go
it's
there.
Italian,
you'll
right?
never get me stuck. I'll never stop. Anyway, my mom might listen to this. Anyway, but you know, same thing. I think it's, you know, you have to think of your customers, and I am a firm believer in thinking of, you know, I want them to, you know, I want to price it at a fair price for them. I want them to be able to come out and have a few beers, not yeah. just one, because one beer costs, I mean, I just can't believe sometimes when I go somewhere and I'm like, am I paying $10 for a pint of Lagunitas IPA? I know how much that keg costs. Right. You know, it's infuriating. So
what do you charge for a pint of IPA?
If it's something like a Lagunitas, $7. If it's something more expensive, like one of the other, like an Industrial Arts, I charge $8.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because those are, you know, I just ordered actually a bunch of Industrial Arts, their state-of-the-art IPA today, and they cost, you know.
They're more, yeah.
They're a lot more.
Kirk?
Yeah, I guess I have the luxury of, well, luxury.
Kirk's true.
Yeah, just having locations in different parts of the city so I can kind of, you know, what I'm charging for the same beer in Tribeca is going to be a little different than what I'm charging in Brooklyn at some of the other, like sure. Bushwick or whatever, and, you know, what have you. So, yeah, but I also of the same ilk. Like, I want people to be able to experience it too and have it and not, like, price it so ridiculously high that, you know, they're not going to be able to drink it. So, I, you know, we do have smaller pours on some of the other beers and, you know, yes, we have gone up to, you know, $10 on some, you know, really rare things, mm-hmm. but, you know, I try to keep it all in line and not be too outlandish and stuff. So
I'm also a firm believer in the pint. I mean, it's like a pint of beer. So whenever I can, there's a pint availability. Obviously, with the 9%ers or whatever, you know, you're not trying to kill anyone, but for an IPA, a Pilsner, there are things that are, that just need to be, they need to go out in pints.
Yeah.
I agree. And also, just to go back to what we were talking about before with the community, I actually turn a lot to, so Beer Menus is a great website where you can find any beer that you are really hankering for and see where it's being poured. I'll go on there to see what are the bars around me charging for this same beer.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So at least I know that if there's a bar that I know way overcharges, I make sure to come under. But I'm like, oh, okay, so Jerry over at One Mile House is charging this much for this beer, so I can, you know, that's what I'll charge for it. You know, I mean, shit, I sat down with Jerry one day.
She said shit.
My mother.
So when you serve the 10-ounce wine glass pour to one of your customers, what are a couple expletives that they would say?
They would say, "God damn you, motherfucker." Stop it, Mom. Don't listen.
The door slam. There you go. You just blew the show up, Jen. You just blew the show up.
All right, now we'll go on the dark side. Since we So, Bobby and Kirk, just tell us, like, one really bad experience has happened to you as a beer bar owner. You know, it could be a little day in the rut,
like,
kind of thing.
With a customer, or you mean just,
somebody just think about one thing that you just want to share with our listeners.
I mean, I had this...
Because your day sucks. You work really hard. Your job sucks. End of the day, you get to drink free beer.
I wouldn't say that at all. I mean, I had a customer, you know, not even a customer, this guy that came in that I knew was kind of going to be trouble. And the bar manager I had at the time, who happened to be a friend of mine, was like, "Oh, no, he's fine. I'm just going to give him a glass of water." He was, you know, kind of on... I'm like, "Yeah, it's going to be a problem. I'm telling you." But he still went ahead and served him the glass of water and let him sit at the bar or whatever. And this guy wasn't buying anything. He was just kind of hanging out. Sure enough, when my bartender turned his back or was doing something, the guy leans over to pour himself a beer. So I walked over. Luckily, he was using the plastic cup my buddy had given him. So I slapped it right out of his hands, and I was like, "Get the fuck out of here!" You know, well, here we are again.
My God, and Mom,
Mom, sorry. And
Jen, you're in a rough.
Yeah,
company.
It was a weird. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, I didn't want to have to be like. And then I got to talk to my bartender and say, "I told you so. I told you so. I knew it was going to happen." So,
and I think that's the thing with this business is you've got, you know, you're introducing alcohol to an unknown audience, and mm-hmm. I mean, for the most part, with a lot of us, we've been around long enough that we do know the bulk of our audience. But there's an unknown element at all times, and that's what makes the job that much more vigilant. Mm. And you're going to run into situations like that where you've got somebody you have to eyeball, you have to kill it before it grows, and you know that can lead to sticky situations. Yeah. It's one of the toughest parts of the job.
Oh, it's sticky. There was beer everywhere.
Yeah. The cleanup's terrible.
But I did. Yeah.
Well, Jen, I'm really digging this Captain Lawrence beer that you made. Let's pour a little more of that.
They did a really good job. I'm really happy with
it.
That's
excellent.
I worked really hard pouring the bucket of hops into the kettle.
can I open something I brought for you guys?
Please do.
As a special
gift.
Yes,
absolutely. Please do.
Now, I dug into my cellar at home, actually, and I found this vintage beer.
While he's opening that beer, can I ask Kirk a question?
Sure.
So when... Kirk, in the 10 years you've been here in Brooklyn, I mean, apart from the other bars, but the Fourth Avenue Pub, what are the differences you've noticed in your end of the neighborhood? Because Kirk and I are kind of catty-cornered in a way in opposite ends of the same neighborhood, ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the biggest thing that happened, that changed, I mean, not even changed a ton, because we knew it was coming, but the Barclays Center, when they opened up. So it definitely brought a different... you know, kind of a more sportsy crowd. Depending
and you have
on
definitely
the
like you've brought in people from the Barclays Center. I mean, you definitely get that pregame, postgame.
Oh yeah,
oh, that's
great. We do a actually, you know what? The concerts have been better for us than anything.
And
to
I
be honest,
that's
with
the direction
you.
The Barclays Center is going.
In. Yeah, which is well, who knows how long the Islanders will be there, but
not long.
But yeah, but. Yeah, so that, well, anyway, the sports crowd was kind of an interesting thing, and, you know, just to have them on. We did a kind of a cross-promotion with Brewery Oma Gang and had them, so we do a happy hour with them and before the Islanders game. So it was cool to, like, see that crowd come in and kind of enjoy what we've been doing, because the bottom line is, and the same thing, I think, with the gate is we're just a bar.
Yep.
You know, we have great beer, but we're just a bar. We're a place for people to hang out, and, you know, we try to make it comfortable for people, and a lot of repeat guests, so that has been good for us anyway.
And when you opened, I mean, there was nothing down.
There was nothing.
There.
Yeah,
you know, it was
yeah.
It was kind of the end of the edge of, you know, Flatbush and Atlantic Avenue, yeah. And everything kind of comes together there, very sort of industrial.
Well, people always say, they're like, oh, you must have seen so many changes in 10 years, and that strip, it's the same people.
Yeah,
right. See,
every, yeah.
It's not changed.
And you have specific standards on your block too.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, yeah. Pack guys are right, you know, two doors down from us. So.
But
yeah.
I guess I'm about to say, wow, when you pour this beer.
So what do we
yeah,
got?
So
what do we got here,
Kirk?
So this is I dipped into the cellar because I knew these guys were celebrating 20 years,
and
I have
a nose on that beer.
Yeah, oh, yeah. A Thomas Hardy's from 1997. So a 20-year-old.
Woo! About that 20-year-old beer.
Amazing.
Hardy's.
Kirk, you are a gentleman.
I do what I can.
He knows how to celebrate.
So
it's quick, like you laid down this baby when you were born. You
quick funny story about this beer is, Kirk, I didn't know Kirk was bringing this beer in, but I had a 10-year-old bottle of Thomas Hardy given to me, a 97, by Dave Broderick. And I had a party at the house, and I was stuck at work, and my wife called me, what do you want to do about the beer situation? I said, I just let, you know, there are beers in the fridge, just let people help themselves. And the party got a little nuts, and the cleanup at the end of the night, I came across the one-third, one-half-full bottle of the 97 Hardy's that somebody pulled from the back of the fridge. I was like, God damn it. And Kirk has returned that beer to me. Fantastic. Because I was holding on.
I want to apologize. It was actually me that did that the first time.
Well, thanks. Well,
this
Kirk.
Is one. Of, this must be one Cheers. Of the perks of the job, right, Kirk?
Yeah, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, this is
the good
this.
Stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've had this for a long time. There's a buddy of mine actually willed this to me. Well, not willed it to me, but, you know, gave it to me, and it was, you know, just been sitting in the back of my.
I feel like when you're in our line of work, you inadvertently ends up aging a lot of beer.
That oh, yeah.
You really
oh, yeah.
don't mean to. I mean, right. I have just shelves of
so
beer that I just, you know, when I'm home, honestly, when I'm home, I drink wine. Or I drink just like crushable cans of like Founders All Day or something.
Sometimes
easy.
Space is your enemy. Like, the, yeah. Wait, what have I got stuck up in that corner, yeah. you know?
Yeah. And then talking about last thing. So do any of you... age vintage kegs of beer.
Definitely.
Yes.
So like, what are some that you, that you keep, think are age worthy? That's a good question.
Well, we just rolled
we know
out.
That Thomas Hardy is considered, I mean, 20 years, this is drinking.
It's an indestructible
amazing.
Beer.
It's, yeah,
it's an indestructible
yeah.
beer.
Yeah. I pour this on my pancakes.
Yeah, yep. Totally.
We just rolled out at the gate a 2012 old curmudgeon from Founders. And, you know, there's definitely some things in my cellar, like a Dogfish Head Worldwide Stouts, you know, these kind of beers that are essentially indestructible. If you store them properly, you keep them at a mean temperature, they're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I got a ton of stuff.
Yeah,
my
I think
partners,
I have a...
if they only knew how many...
What are some Sorry, what are now, some others that are age worthy?
I've got an Avery Mephistopheles in my since your lady was working with Avery.
Oh, yeah.
So however many years ago that was, that's
yeah,
how
was
long
while.
It's been
yeah.
sitting in my basement.
Yeah, I tapped one of those when Adam came to town, and
yeah.
then we ended up doing Irish Car Bomb. Actually, it was Bobby
oh, that,
that was doing Irish Car Bombs.
No, I wasn't
with
doing
Adam
the
Avery.
Irish Car Bombs. I was encouraging Adam.
Yeah. He shut up my event.
That's what I do.
Twisted up yeah. after spending
Were
time with you.
Were you doing it with
Adam
the Mephistopheles? Because that
one
would
of the
be
great
amazing.
Great characters in this business.
Yeah. That's sure.
Tell you what, I'm
going to
invite you guys back in like a month or two.
Great.
And we're just going to do a vintage beer show.
Oh, that's great.
Because
right?
I think for our listeners, too, it's like... You know, you don't really know what to put down. You don't know the condition. Maybe some of these beers that are meant to be 20 years, you open too soon. It's kind of like wine. So I'm really enjoying this beer. Once again, what it's Thomas
it's
Hardy's.
Thomas Hardy.
1997.
Yeah.
And it's we've been drinking so many great beers on the show. Thanks everybody. Let's go around one more time. Everyone say their full name and their pub.
Bobby Gagnon from the Gate in Park Slope, Brooklyn.
Can I just say I never knew that's how you pronounced your name?
Me neither.
Gagnon.
Kirk Strubley.
Now.
I looked it up before Avenue the show.
Phonetically.
And yeah. I'm Jen Meslanka from the Spring Lounge.
Well, you guys, thanks so much for joining me. Check us out at heritagerenetwork.org. Become a member. Coming up, the Great Brooklyn Grill out in downtown Brooklyn, May 27th. That's our next event. That is at cookoutnyc.com. Thanks again, Jen, Bobby, and Kirk, for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, intern Hillary Fassin, and our engineer, David Tadashur. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
All thanks, right. Jimmy.
Woo. Thanks,
cheers.
Jimmy.
Salud.
Cheers. Cheers.
Guys. Thanks, guys.
Yes. I stand with Spring Lounge.
20 years.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.